This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of WorldSweeper.com, and I'm speaking with Gail Holzman Jr., who is president of American Sweeping Incorporated in Kansas City, Missouri. Gail has been involved in the sweeping business for 24 years and has bought and sold a number of sweeping companies throughout that time. Gail will be talking to us about what you should know and think about as an owner of a sweeping business when it's time to sell it. So, Gail, thank you very much for taking your time with the WorldSweeper.com listening audience, and please tell us what we need to know.
Well, good evening, Ranger, and thanks for getting me involved in this thing, because I think what you talk about is a very important issue, because this is really what we're all driving towards. When we get in the business, what are our goals? Where are we going to? What is the final stage? I mean, I would like to think that there's going to be a day that I could lay the arms down and be able to stop, enjoy myself, enjoy, smell the roses, and do the things that I want to do for Gail, which is what we got accomplished this year. I actually got an opportunity to sell a major part of American Sweeping August this year to a competitor here in Kansas City, which still leaves us in the big sweepers, but it took us out of those small sweepers, except for special events and those kind of things. But we're not in the regular parking lot sweeping business anymore, which I must tell you, Ranger, I have missed the last few months, but the midnight calls have not been missed, I must tell you.
No doubt whatsoever.
But it's really been a good feeling because, you know, we've had a journey. The journey started with one truck. My first month billing was around $400. By the time, you know, we've gone to the plateau to $200,000-$300,000 a month. And sweeping, it fluctuates depending on the time of year. It fluctuates depending on how many cities you want to be in. As you know, we've been in several different cities besides Kansas City. We buy companies, we sell companies, we take companies out of distress, we dress them up, sell them to a new owner. And really, that's where we're making our money. I mean, you can make a really fine living sweeping parking lots, doing Kmarts, Walmarts, and strip centers, but where you really make your luck is when you sell a company and enjoy the bonus of the prize there.
So what are the things that you would consider from the seller's perspective when it's a company that you've built up and made your baby? What kinds of things, first off, when you plan ahead for this, what would you do to your fleet and or to your accounts? What kind of pre-sale preparations would you make prior to putting it up for sale?
Well, you know, selling a company, you know, especially one that you've had for a lot of years, especially if it's been handed down through the family, there's a lot of ownership that comes, a lot of personal feelings that come with that, and that's a hard attachment to be able to break. Money really doesn't have a lot to do with it if you're making money. If you're not making money, it's a whole different set of rules. I mean, if you're not making money, you're going to do things differently. But if you are making money and you think you got something worth a lot of money, then you're able to be able to do some things like dress your fleet up, make sure that your systems are in place, make sure that your managers are in place, make sure all your good enthusiasm is in place, and the things that's going to bring a potential buyer to the table and pay top dollar for your organization. And that's really what the whole goal is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're losing money and you're in distress, that brings a whole different set of circumstances. Because really what you're trying to do is stop the bleed. You're wanting out. You don't want to do this anymore. You're burned out. You're tired of it. You've had your set of problems, and you don't want those problems anymore. So, therefore, you're just looking to get rid of it. Those are the companies I'm looking for, quite frankly, if I'm going to buy a company, because I can do something very quickly with that company. I'm really not interested in buying a company making a whole bunch of money and the guy's really in love with, because it's real difficult to be able to make a good enough deal on something like that to make it worthwhile unless you're just going to be in the sweet business the rest of your life. I'm looking for something to stress if I'm on the buyer's side. Of course, if I'm on the seller's side, my whole intention is to have a good first-class, well-dressed, well-groomed, a well-prepared company for you to walk in and say, hey, you know what, this company's making money, and this is the company I want to own. And for that, I'm going to give you top dollar. So you see the difference, Ranger? There's mm-hmm. definitely a difference between a distressed company and a company that's doing well. Fortunately, I had a company that's doing well and was able to sell that point to the new owner, and I was paid very handsomely for it, and God bless us for real.
What kind of concerns do you have about giving, or advice would you have about giving your financial information, client information, those sorts of things? How do you deal with that with a buyer?
You need a confidentiality agreement. Add hello. I mean, there's no discussions without a confidentiality agreement of any sort. How many drugs you own, what kind of accounts you're doing. Without a confidentiality agreement, I highly recommend not to say a word. Once you get a confidentiality agreement and preferably a deposit, a non-refundable deposit, which in my case, that's what I did. If a person is going to put 5, 10, 20, 50 grand down on a non-refundable deposit with the intention of buying your company because they think they want it that bad, the chances of you selling that company to these folks are pretty high. If you have nothing down and no confidentiality agreement, all you're doing is giving them free information. Not smart. So I highly recommend you plan ahead, have a confidentiality agreement, and the ultimate goal is to get a non-refundable deposit.
And what percentage of the sales price would you say that you should ask for in that?
Well, you know, I don't know if I'd use a percentage as much as I would use a 5, 10, 20, 25, some kind of increment where you feel like, okay, now if I do this, you know, what is it worth to me to give this information to this individual? And with a confidentiality agreement and possibly a non-compete attached to, which very rarely will you be able to be lucky enough to get a non-compete with a prospective buyer. But let's say you can, then that protects your accounts. We never give the name of the accounts till the last hour. We can give account listings without disclosing who the accounts are, without actually giving names of the accounts. We usually use a number system or a lettering system. And that way that the potential buyer doesn't actually get the actual information. But he has enough information using the number and the lettering systems that he can at least make a informed decision on whether or not this revenue is going to work in his system. You got to give him somewhat of a geographic location of that account, but he doesn't necessarily need to know it's Oak Park Mall or Westwood Center or whatever the account may be.
And then what are you trying to get as a multiple of earnings of a...
The old days, 10, 15 years ago, everybody talked multiples because that was the popular way to buy a service industry. If a guy's doing 100 grand a month, give him 3 months and he wants. Things are changing though, Ranger. We're not seeing that as much as we used to. Why? It's all come back to multiple because it's a formula, of course. But we're not going in with that in mind as much as what we used to back in the day. Today, with the way the pricing is, the competition is, and the different things we're having to fight today as we didn't have 10, 15 years ago, we're actually looking at these companies on a whole. We're looking at what basis they have, what the EBITDA is, and where they're going to be able to take this company. Myself, if I'm looking at a company to buy, my particular interest is what the growth factor is going to be. Is there a growth factor? Am I already in this marketplace? I mean, there's a lot of questions you have to answer till you put the formula together for this particular market, for this particular company. And you know what? If I'm in St. Louis, Columbia, or up in Bow, Washington, I mean, those are going to be three different geographic areas that may govern how I buy that company. And, of course, at the end of the day, if I give a guy $300,000 for a company doing 100 grand, you could say, well, I gave him 3 months. If I gave him $1 million, that means I gave him 10 months. So, yeah, at the end of the day, it comes back, and you can figure it out, go in reverse. But very rarely do I buy a company doing multiples in this day and age. It's generally equipment plus where will this company stand and what potential does this company have to judge the blue sky. That make sense?
And is it a lower amount of money if there is a higher market saturation if you look at the company and say, well...
Not necessarily. I know what you're driving at. It makes sense because what you're saying, the harder the market, the less the money.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily true. Sometimes the harder the market, the better the market. If you got a good-sized market, like Houston, Texas is a good example, Denver, Colorado. I mean, you see things come and go in both those markets the last 10 years like there's no tomorrow. Guys in, guys out, guys in, guys out. Well, does that mean they're worth less money? Maybe, but some cases not. It's all up to the owner how he has the ability to be able to address his company. And at the end of the day, what's it worth? Well, you tell me. If I go in and look at a company that don't have a good maintenance program, doesn't have a good retention program, doesn't have a good expansion program, doesn't even know how to bill its customers properly, and ultimately doesn't even know what the letters P&L stand for, well, what are you going to give that guy? Not a heck of a lot. And you know what? He probably doesn't want a heck of a lot because he knows he doesn't have a company worth a lot of money. You walk into a first-class organization like American Sweeping, and I can name a number of companies around the country like mine, that actually go and get the learning and go to the seminars and understand, work with NAPSA and understand the programs that need to be in place to make you a first-class company, you're going to pay premium dollars for this company because it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend, and in fact, I'll say that I know that a recommendation is to have a website, have a domain name.
Sure.
You know, ideally, say, Chamber of Commerce membership or Better Business Bureau or whatever is important in your marketplace. And those are the kinds of things that establish you as a professional in your market. And that helps raise your sales price as well, of course.
Well, let me address that right quick, because I think what you're hitting on something that's real important, Ranger. And one thing I must tell you, it's expensive. And unfortunately, you know, does the little guy, the 1, 2, 3 truck operator, have the dollars to do what you just outlined?
Yeah, well,
you can afford a website. If you can't, I mean, that's foolish. You got to have a website, because our day and age, that's what's everything coming to. It's like not having a TV or a microwave, for crying out loud. So that needs to happen. Now, are you smart enough to understand that? Well, you know, get with NAPSA, get with Ranger, and I guarantee you can get the questions answered with World Sweeper, especially on these particular instances. Now, let me address chambers, farm associations, IRM. You know, there are enough chambers in Kansas City. I could spend several thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars if I joined all of them. And yeah, you want to do a certain amount of that, but you have to be selective. You have to go with the chambers that are aggressive, that will use your services, and they're actually doing something. Make sure you check them out. Make sure that you go and make sure that they're taking care of their business to make you business. If they're not having coffee hours, if they're not having meetings, if they're not having social exchanges for you to attend to be able to get your name amongst other chamber members, you're wasting your money. And I, quite frankly, have been to some pretty lame chambers.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure, if you're going to get involved in the associations, that you check them out. You just don't automatically own them, because we say it's a smart idea. It is a smart idea, without a doubt. But make sure that you're getting with a smart chamber. It's going to make you money, because it's going to cost you money to be part of the organization.
And you need to then follow through and go to those meetings, or have your managers go to those meetings.
Absolutely. That's the problem. Everybody with good intentions, they'll pay their $250, $300, $400, whatever it is, with the good intentions of going. If you don't go and nothing happens, what you get, nothing.
Right.
Then you come to Nashville or wherever we're having our national conference, you're crying about how you're not growing, but the ultimate question is, well, what are you doing about it? Well, you're watching Monday Night Football. You know what? My dad taught me it's not what happens between 8 and 5, it happens between 5 and 8 that makes the difference. And there's a lesson to be learned there. And I got news for you. If you're going to go to chambers, generally between 5 and 8.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, what other items would you bring into the equation here when you're going to sell your business?
Okay.
Is there anything in particular you do to your that you can do to your equipment, whether you're a failing business or whether you're a rising business?
If you're a failing business, or you're a rising business, and you want to sell, put water on your trucks. It sounds pretty ridiculous, but really, that's the lesson. Put water on your trucks. Make sure that you're keeping your maintenance records in order. I don't care if it's a spark plug. I don't care if it's a head vent. I don't care what it is. Make sure you keep track of it, because that's value. When a guy walks into your shop and he goes, hey, listen, what have you been spending on these 3 trucks? He wants to see. Why? He wants to know if you take care of the truck. When's the last time you rebuilt the engine if you had to? When did you buy the truck? How often are you putting oil in? That kind of thing is very valuable. And I can sell a company with records a lot easier than without records. And it doesn't make a difference. Same way with account retention, same way with new business. When you get on the account side, what are you doing as far as keeping records to make sure that you are taking care of the business, and I can relate that to a potential buyer? Because those are the kind of things they're going to want to see, and those are the kind of things they'll pay money for. Nobody pays money for I don't know, believe me. If I tell you I don't know how long the conversation's going to last, Ranger, not very long. If you've got service records, I can do that if we do.
All right. Is there anything else on this topic that you think should be added in? How about the financing of a business when you're looking to sell it? What do you look at there?
Well, I tell you, Ranger, that's probably the most important part of the equation. Why? When I go look at a business, that's really what I'm looking for. I can make a few adjustments in the business itself if we have the finance negotiated. Now, from a seller standpoint, depending on what my tax ramifications are going to be, whether or not I want to do an asset sale or whether I want to do a purchase of agreement, those are the two questions I needed from a tax standpoint. So I am suggesting that you make sure that you talk to your accountant when you put your business up for sale and have a defined outline of what your parameters will be. Because most of good buyers are going to have a good set of questions on, well, will you own a finance? Will you take 50% back? Will you have a bank available? Can I assume your loan? Those kind of things need to be preset before you put your business up for sale. Again, we're we're back to the I don't know syndrome. If you say, hey, I don't know, the conversation's not going to last long. Have a defined plan as the seller for what you will not do before you put your business on the market. Because I promise you, if there's a buyer in front of you, he knows in the back of his mind how he's going to pay for your business or what he's going to ask you to contribute to be able to afford your business. And that's a very important point.
And that brings us to a side point to that, which is that if you get approached by someone that wants to buy your business as opposed to you are planning to sell it and you've dressed your company up and so forth, don't provide knee-jerk information before you talk to your CPA and other advisors and decide what to tell this prospective buyer.
And that's exactly right. And you'll find, too, I know from buying and selling, being on both sides of the table, you know, what we talk about today and what we talk about 30 days or 2 weeks or 10 days from now when we get through the contracts and stuff is generally changed up anyway. So you have to be flexible. That's the key ingredient there. You've got to be able to think on your feet, be flexible, and have plan A, B, and C. Because you know what? You're going to have to make some decisions on the fly because not everything's going to be exactly the way you think it is going into it. It never happens that way.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Gail. And I look forward to your interview about the considerations on the other end of the sales side.
Buying a company.
When you're going to look to buy it.
A little more fun.
All right. Thanks again.
You bet.